Oh, yeah. I mean, if I go back to a Bond, the volcano, which is the volcano set, which was where the 007 stage is now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a kid walking onto the interior of a volcano at a helicopter, proper helicopter pad, monorail system, which actually worked. Lifts and rockets, everything worked in there. Ken Adams was the designer of that. I mean, for me as a kid, that was unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to Cunning Stunts with myself, David Holmes. Ever since I was a teenager, I've been performing as a stuntman on feature films. And for 10 years, I was the stunt double for Harry on the Harry Potter films. Whilst preparing a stunt for the final film in the series, I suffered a spinal injury that had the effect of paralysing me from the chest down and ending my career. However, in the decades since the accident, my love of stunts, the stunt performer community and movies has never wavered. So I'm starting this podcast to highlight and pay tribute to the amazing performers who make up the stunt community, giving you first-hand accounts of the work that goes into crafting some of the mind-blowing action scenes you've seen on films such as Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and The Avengers, while also revealing the grit, talent, and bravado of those that risk their lives in the name of entertainment. One quick note, the other voice you'll hear occasionally is Dan Radcliffe, one of my best friends and acting double on the Harry Potter films. He's been sitting in on some of these interviews. Okay, welcome back to Cunning Stunts. And this week, you guys are lucky enough to hear my interview with Mr. Greg Powell. Greg is my old governor from the Harry Potter films and truly a legend within the film industry. Greg has been working in the film game since he was 14 years old in 1967. His father and his uncle were both stunt legends within their own right. That was Nosha Powell and Dinny Powell. And in this interview, you're going to hear some of the stories from Greg about working alongside his family members. We're also going to hear some of his stories from films and jobs since. Greg's got an epic credit list. As a performer, he worked on the Bond films, Superman, Indiana Jones. And as a stunt coordinator, he's coordinated Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Rings, Hitman's Bodyguard, Harry Potter films, Fast and the Furious, and even an Avengers. So here's our interview with Greg. I hope you guys enjoy. So, thanks for joining us today.
Right.
Do you mind introducing, obviously I know you very well, but your name and how long you've been involved in the stunt industry?
Greg Powell, involved since 1967.
Really? So that was your first film?
14.
14?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So you gave me my start when I was 14 as well.
Well, you may be a bit younger.
13 going to 14, Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Yeah, wow. So 67.
What was it on? It started off as the Dubious Patriots, ended up with You Can't Win Them All with Tony Curtis and Charles Bronson.
Okay, cool.
I went out there on a holiday because Dad and Dinny was out there working, yeah. And I was just wound up doing some background riding on it.
Nice. Right, so then. Mentioning Dad and Dinny, so can you just a brief explanation of that?
Nosha Powell, my father, and Dinny, his brother, my uncle.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Dad passed away 3 years ago. Dinny's still going. Not as strong as you used to be, but I still wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of it.
Because of
them, I got into the business. You know, I was never going to do anything else.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, you know, if I think about it, the first set I remember walking onto was from Russia with Love, which wow. I think was 1962 or three. I think I was about eight. And then as the boy, you know, Bill Cummings and all the old faces, you know, they was there. Used to go and get their teas and coffees, and then yeah. I'll go and get my gun. So you run off to the armour and get a machine gun like you do that today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's, and it was, I can remember it like it was yesterday, unfortunately. It was Sean Connery running around the gypsy encampment on From Russia in Love where the two women are having a fight.
Yeah.
And there was all gunfire, and look, them days all the stuntmen was my uncle. You know, Uncle George, Uncle Bill, this and that and the other, you know. And I just remember that night work, so I didn't have to go to school the next day, which was good.
Yeah.
And
so just going back to that, you mentioned that everyone was your uncle, so the stunt community was a lot smaller back then?
Oh, blimey, yeah, a lot smaller.
And you all knew each other, you all passed the work around.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so then that was your first introduction through the family and being a youngster on set.
Yeah.
And when do you remember doing your first stunt yourself?
I think it was probably Jousting, funny enough, it would have been, which wasn't on screen, I think, because between 67 and early 70s, the film business went quiet, so the boys started up a jousting.
Oh,
and they traveled round, and up being one of the jousters, doing a saddle fall would have been my first stunt, but it wasn't for television or film, it was just for a public show. And for quite a few years, they brought a jousting team together, and we toured all the way around England, Ireland, then they went to Australia, America.
And how many shows would you do a day?
Definitely one a day, maybe two.
And like, are you getting, how many times are you hitting the ground during a show?
If we'd done one, it was one. If we'd done two, it was two. But then, I mean, whatever ground you turned up on, that was the ground you was falling on. So it could have been really nice, or it could have been
that.
And then I think there was only one set of hip pads, which belonged to, God bless his soul, Roy Street. We used to be hanging up in the tent, and it was a rush to get to the tent to whoever got the hip pads first. Other than that, it was bits of paper or whatever you could pad yourself up with.
So live shows, did you feel like you cut your teeth as a performer?
I think live shows were good.
Yeah.
You know, in front of the audience, it give you confidence.
Yeah.
Especially something that I enjoyed was riding horses anyway. So I enjoyed that. Live audiences, it was great.
Brilliant. So you mentioned that you had a connection with the Bond films and the family have, but who's your favourite Bond, Greg?
Who?
Who was your favourite Bond?
Well, I mean, you got to say Connery was a great Bond. I mean, Roger was a different Bond.
Yeah.
And Daniel's, Timothy Dalton, and to me, he wasn't.
Yeah, and Pierce?
Pierce was a good Bond, but yeah. I think Sean and Daniel were the best Bonds, but my favourite was Roger because it was just Roger.
Brilliant.
What was your dad? How did your dad and your uncle? How did they get into it to start off?
Well, Dad was a professional boxer. So was his brother Dinny.
Right.
And through the boxing career they had as professional boxers, I mean, Dad was rated in the top 10 in Europe, so he had quite a good reputation. And he was an entertainer more than a boxer. If he'd have been a serious, but if he'd have been had Dinny's aggression and kept his state, he'd probably been world champion because he used to laugh around them. They used to put him on last in the evening so it'd keep the audience there for his entertainment. And through the boxing, Lewis Gilbert, the director, who'd done a few Bonds, approached Dad to do a film called, I think it was Emergency Call or something like that, you know, with Freddie Mills, who was a world championship boxer. I think he was doing a little bit of extra work, but that really got him going into the business as a stunt person early days because he'd done a fight in it, and then it went on from there.
And then when you were on set with your dad, do you remember sort of, you know, looking at him and the response other people gave to him? And you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like... Yeah, yeah. No, listen. When he was there, it was Dad or Dinny. That's all I wanted to do right back from the early days. I mean, I could even go back Michael Benteen, It's a Square World. I don't know if you remember, you wouldn't remember, that was way before, you know, I was a young boy, and a lot of the stunt boys used to work on that, It's a Square World. It was just before Monty Python, all them capers and stuff, what come on from there. So, you know, I spent most of my time on TV or film sets rather than going to school. That's why I do this work, because I'm used to paperwork.
And me. There's a community in stunts that I don't think, and is that just something about like the work, the nature of the work you're doing?
I think it's the nature of the work, and you do try and look after your co-workers as much as you can, because being outside, you see things that they might not see, so you just go and mention it. You go and look up, you know, you try and look after people because you don't know, you don't want anyone to get hurt.
No,
Generally, you might not like the person, you might hate the person, but you don't want him to get hurt. You want him to do a good job, because if that person does a good job, it makes the whole team look good.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what I think, there is that like team aspect to stunts that is really like unique, and not a lot of people like know about that, like that, the fact that it is a world and it is a community that it was, you know. Yeah.
The thing is, what you don't see, you know, like you mentioned the stunt ball, which has been running for a million years, you know, which it started off at the Grosvenor, fantastic nights, you know. Then the boys started up the fight night, which you've been to a couple of times, which was the first one, was the best one ever.
Yeah.
I mean, they was knocking seven and colour out of his I mean, Jonathan Cohen, I had to give him a week's work the week after, because Derek Lee pounded him to the ground.
Yeah, he did. That
you know what I mean? And I thought it was game.
When
he really
came with the mohawk and the...
I'll give him a week's work just for game, just for standing up for Dell.
Absolutely. Del. Yeah. Staying you in know? There for three rounds.
Absolutely. You know, and it's a not. But people, it's, I don't know what it is, but they expect the stunt people to do things like that, run balls and do this and drive fast cars and, you know, have all this sort of
probably
stuff.
Probably started with yourselves and all the older guys, though, that sense of community and building that.
You know, years ago, it was like a labour exchange Friday at Pinewood in the bar. Everyone, if you wasn't working, you'd meet in the bar at Pinewood. You'd have a couple of drinks, then you'd go into the restaurant and have a nice meal, and you'd have a laugh at all the stunt boys. You can imagine all the stunt boys sitting together, spoons hitting people on the end, tripping. You know, you'd have a good laugh. And out of being at Pinewood, you'd wind up, oh, come and see me, I've got a job for you next week. You know, it was one of those things. Oh. That doesn't happen now, because you can get into Buckingham Palace easier than you can get into Pinewood Studios now with security.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have an excuse to go into a place that I've been going to since I was 8 years of age.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, you don't get that community anymore like you used to on a film. It's a shame. I mean, there was no greater time when we used to go on location and everyone used to stay in the hotel, the actors and this and that, you know, when we were done Wild Geese. Wild Geese is Richard Burton, Roger Moore, Richard Harris, wasn't it? Wow. I mean, what three great cut? Jack Watson, Hardy Kruger, Hugh Griffiths. I mean, there was
and you was all drinking after work together.
Richard Burton and Harris
got barred after the first barbecue because he sang Green Green Grass Alone for the 20th time, and Ewan Lloyd barred him so he couldn't go for the barbecue for another 9 weeks. We had to pass him beer over the fence.
Now, just talking about that, going after work and drinking with people, didn't you work with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase?
Rocky double for Dan Aykroyd on that, didn't it?
And what was it?
Spies Like Us.
Yeah. Oh, so brilliant.
Didn't they used to sing every night in the bar?
When we was in Norway, we was all, we was all in the same hotel, freezing cold, our snow was like 6 foot deep, and you go down and have a meal, and of course you've got Dan Aykroyd, Blues Brothers, you've got Chevy Chase, funny guy and everything. They used to get on the old accordion and start singing. Well, it wasn't a big town, but that town used to end up in that hotel every night because the Blues Brothers and that was singing, and it was fantastic.
Wicked.
It was fantastic. Had a great time. Used to get up in the morning feeling terrible, but we had a good night.
And I know we're jumping around a little bit, but on the Wild Geese,
yes,
isn't there a Richard Harris and a snake story coming down every night?
Richard Harris, we was in rondavels, you spread around, but Burton, Harris and Moore had these bigger places up on the hill.
Yeah.
And they used to sell walking sticks. That's what they was called until Richard Harris called it a snake stick, and then suddenly they become snake sticks. And the only reason it became a snake stick is when you'd be sitting in the bar outside, you could hear rah, rah, bang, and he'd be hitting all the bushes all the way down to keep the snakes away. But if he just walked down, they wouldn't bother him anyway. It's just that he had a path 10 foot wide down from his where he beat the bushes every night, you know what I mean? But if he just walked down normally, they wouldn't have bothered him. Yeah. So everyone bought a snake stick and wanted to be like Richard.
Did you ever have to do a fight with Richard or anything?
No, we didn't have to do a fight with him, but he was very funny because I think, and Rock was there, I think one night we were sitting in the bar, one night me, I think it was Rocky, Richard Harris, and we was in the bar had emptied, we got the day off the next day, and he's got the wait, 24 Irish coffees. Who are they for? Us. 24 Irish coffees, do you remember a lot of... It was like that the next day. And that's what it was like. Great fun.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Now, I know we're, again, jumping around a bit, but you just going back to your dad's boxing career.
Yeah.
Read your dad's book, Nosher, if all good record bookshops sell it. But in the book, he mentions he got to fight. Was he sparring with Muhammad Ali?
He done a European tour with Joe Lewis.
Wow.
Joe Lewis was many times world champion, and that was his favourite. He sparred with Ali, Ingemar Johansson, Floyd Patterson, Sugar Ray Robinson.
Jesus.
Really?
All at, you know,
and not forgetting, lovely Dinny sparred with Dan, didn't he?
Yeah, give him a black eye one day. Yeah, walked straight onto it.
Well, I'm sure that's...
Do me a favour, Dinny, you just knocked the star out of the biggest film going this year.
I'm sure Dinny's got prouder moments. Yeah. I wasn't his toughest opponent.
I thought this is my last day on Harry Potter, this one.
That was great. I learned it. I did not make that mistake again.
Now, we spoke about Nosha and his boxing, but also he used to run the doors in London, didn't he, for some very unsavoury characters.
The Jack of Clubs in ISOs, where they all used to get down there, because it was a kosher restaurant. Ali used to go there when he was over. Orson Welles, I mean, everyone used to go there, and they used to have a club downstairs, and they used to frequent. He was having a lot of trouble down there, and I was never worried there, because he could handle himself, as people know. But the owner, Jack Iso, said, Fred... And his nickname's Nosha, but his real name's Frederick. Oh. And some people call him Nosha, some people call him Fred. Jack used to call him Fred. He said, Fred, he said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to get you a bit of help on the door. He said, because, you know, you're going through it and everything like that. He said, that'd be nice, Jack. Anyway, the next night, a fella turned up security, come with a big Alsatian. All right, lovely. So to be friends with the dog, the old man used to go down to the kitchen, get some beef, feed the beef. And he's doing this for weeks and weeks of feeding the beef. And the dog used to sit in the cloakroom by the big fish tank there. All of a sudden, it's off one night. The fellas don't want to pay the bill. So they've gone downstairs. They're not paying the bill. He said, well, if you don't pay the bill, you ain't leaving the premises. Well, how are you going to stop us? The old man said, easy. He put the chains around the door and locked them in. Instead of locking people out, he's locked them in like that. We're still not paying the bill. He said, listen, do yourself a favour, boys. Pay the bill, as otherwise I'm going to let the dog go. Let the effing dog go. He said, I mean it. I'll let the dog go. So he said, well, let the dog go. The fella said, well, he said, let the effing dog go. As he let the dog go, he chewed the old man's trousers off. He went for the old man. He's been feeding for 3 weeks, and he liked it. And the fellas went, they got the money out of their pocket. They said, this is the best entertainment we've had for weeks. Here's the money. Let him out.
Oh, I love it. That's brilliant.
Yeah. But when he tells a story, you know, I mean, it was a funny story, because the old man always used to wear a toupe, you know, like that. He had this. I used to put the tape on it, and I used to stick it on his head like that. More cat with it. Anyway, he's there one night, and it's off again. Now, he was off there, not every night, but a lot of nights. And Dinny was there, lucky enough, because Dinny, the pair of them together, they was like well beaters. They're having a fight, and this fella's gone behind the old man and grabbed his hair. And as he's grabbed his hair, the old man's just turned around, the fella's holding his hair like that. He went, ha ha! Bosh! He did it like that. But them stories could go on forever, you know.
Yeah.
But the best one, the boxing one, for instance, Ron Harmon, he'd come over and he'd been fighting everyone, been knocking them out all over the place. And he was due to fight at Streatham Ice Rink, where their dad used to fight a lot for Jack Solomons. And his opponent got the flu or something. So Jack Solomons rang him and said, look, Fred, I've got a fight for you. Like Friday night, straight at my street. Oh, blimey, Jack. He said, I haven't been training on nothing. He said, don't worry about it. He said, I'll give you like 150 quid. He went, 150 quid, he said. He said, that's top of the bill, Jack. He said, I ain't done no training. He said, how much is he getting? He went, well, he's getting 350 quid. He went, well, if it's 350 quid to give a belt, and it's got to be worth 350 quid to take a belt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, all right, you got it. So anyway, he's gone in the ring, and Dinny was in his corner, and he's spying around, they've gone around. Oh, well, Dad's like, oh, hold up, he's a little bit weak there. And Dad, bang, he's hit him, and the fella's gone down. Now, this was unexpected. But when the fella's gone down, he's fell down, and he's facing Dinny's Dad's corner, which Dinny's in, yeah? And Dad's always said, he said, I don't think he'd have got up. He said, but it did help by Dinny going, stay down, stay down. 8, 9, 10, out. Like that. He said, I don't think he got up, but Dinny helped in that way by just saying, stay down.
So now, going from the progression and Dad and yourself in the industry, you've performed for, what, 10, 15 years as a performer?
I went from... Well, basically, if I said from the start, from 67 to about 85...
Yeah.
..as a full-time performer. And then from 85, Nigel Wall, a producer, given my job as a coordinator on, I think it was 85, a film called Elaney. Okay. With John Malkovich,
right, yeah.
in Spain. And then I've done a bit more performing, a little bit coordinating, and then suddenly the coordinating, stepped lucky on. Enough, taking over, because I can't jump about like I used to, which is good.
But, like, picking up just in your performing career, bumps and bruises on the way.
Yes.
Greg, do you mind listing them? Because I know that you're like a...
Ankles I've done.
Yeah.
I've got, through wear and tear and some big bangs, I've got two new knees. My arms are not great at the moment, but I've had a new shoulder put in here.
Yeah.
You get your bruises.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game, Dave.
Yeah.
That's what I think is so fascinating about it, is that there's like... Nobody does what you guys do in our industry. Nobody sacrifices, nobody puts their bodies on the line.
No, I've done it because, you know, I've always wanted to do stunts. I was never ever going to do anything else, to be honest with you, other than do that. I used to love throwing myself off horses, whatever I could do at any time. I wouldn't say so much now, but then, you know what I mean?
Do you still get on a horse now, Greg?
Yeah, occasionally I'll get on there, but I've got a cap and badge for that.
I've done that, so I'll
watch the horses go now.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll jump on. But, you know, it's something that I enjoyed doing. It's something I wanted to do, it's like when I used to do all horse stuff.
Yeah.
Like I knew I could ride a motorbike. I knew I could drive a car. And it was like Ray Austin, funny enough, giving me my first job on a motorbike, doing a jerk back off of that. Then Bob Simmons gave me my first job doing a high fall.
Yeah.
You know, because I wanted to do it, and I used to let them know, but you just got to break that ground. And then you wanted to do a truck turnover. You do get to do your stuff you want to do.
Yeah.
But it takes time because the coordinators have to have their confidence in you to do that. When the register wasn't so big, you know, there'd be a lot less performers. You knew everyone.
Yeah.
And when you come in, like if you was doing with Simmons with a Bond film, you'd have all the Rocky and all the boys up the front here, you know, and you know the new boys would be out the back doing the fight out there, and all of a sudden he didn't do too bad. That kid over there, bring him up and put him over there. So that's how you become probation intermediate within a week. Then because I was used for that kid, bring him up this way, you know.
And that's the advantage of having a register as well.
That's why you've got a register.
Yeah,
because all them people have done their training. They spent all their money. This is what they want to do. Whether they're good or bad, they've done it and they've got on the register.
Yeah.
Now, just by having all them qualifications doesn't make you a good stunt person.
Right.
It just shows me and the other people that you're good at gymnastics, you're good at fighting, you're good at horse riding, you're good at scuba diving and stuff like that. It just gives you a varied thing. Now, whether you can transform that into being a stunt person is another step.
Yeah.
And how important to you is a performance in the stunt as well as just actually making the stunt, but the acting part?
It's very important because unfortunately, a lot of the guys who's coming in lately think they turn up on the set and all they do is that stunt. But what they don't realise is a week prior to that, they're sitting in the back of the bar. You know what I mean? Or they've got to walk across the set.
Yeah,
or they've got to do something. There's a lead up to that stunt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I suppose it's important, you know, like all action sequences have some level of performance in them, don't they?
Well, yeah.
You're the baddie that the lead actor's fighting or not. You've still got to look the part.
You've got to look the part. You've got to be at to act.
Yeah.
And this is a thing that's going to be coming in, I think, when the new register starts, is an acting skill. I think one of the things they're probably bringing is, like, funny enough, we done it, not because it was a skill, because we didn't have to have them when we came in, but working in front of a live audience. Because a lot of stuntmen, funny enough, are very shy. They don't mind getting blown up and smashed, but to stand in front of the camera doing what I'm doing now is a lot harder than what you think.
I never had that problem, did I?
Well,
he never had that problem. Some of the things you used to come up with, I can't tell you.
Don't tell us. We can be here for hours.
Now, you'd be standing there talking, William Hurt?
Yeah, William Hurt, wasn't it? Yeah.
On Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Oh, dear. You'd be having a serious conversation and suddenly, hold it. Oh, it's Dave there. And Dave would be looking up like that and he'd come out with the most ridiculous thing like that. Dave, please, go away and leave me too.
I think collection of bits.
No, I've got to tell you the funniest, though. After Lost in Space, Bedazzled.
Oh, my days, yeah.
Bedazzled? You were on that?
One day's work in a classroom, all kids.
Oh, God.
And then Elizabeth Hurley was the teacher.
Oh. Oh,
absolutely stunning looking in the thing like that, and all the kids, they start fighting and then he gets thrown down the aisle between the desks.
Yeah, she drops her board rubber, doesn't she? And she says, can someone pick that up for us? And all of us rush to go and pick
like
it up.
That. Cut, like, we're...
Bundled on. There's like 15 different boys on my back and I'm the first one to get the board rubber.
I don't know whether this will make it, but every time we say cut, and there was half a dozen, so Dave would be laying, looking straight up her throat like that. Get out, will you?
You know, imagine a 16-year-old.
I know, that's what I'm trying to, like, think. Like, you at 15.
But she actually thought it was quite funny. That quite funny. David, will you get out of there, please, and throw him out?
Brilliant. Lovely. Mate, great day.
You never want to miss an opportunity, will you?
No.
Greg, can I just list off some of the films you coordinated? Because, I mean, you've got a hell of a CV behind you. So, you done the first Mission Impossible?
Yes.
You done the first Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
All of the Band of Brothers?
Yes.
All of the Harry Potters?
Yes.
Since Potter, you've done Da Vinci Code?
Yes.
Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yes.
And can you list off some more for me, please?
Fast and Furious?
Yep.
Safe House?
Yep.
Phantom of the Opera?
Yep.
Hitman's Bodyguard.
Yeah, and that looks good, by the way.
The Foreigner with Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Hitman's Bodyguard's going to be very funny.
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan film, I must say, he's going to be very different to what people normally see him.
Really?
Yeah. And The Foreigner and Unlocked.
Unlocked?
Yeah.
All right, wicked.
I was going to ask, you mentioned High Falls earlier. What was your first or highest?
Yeah, I wanted to do a High Fall.
Yeah.
Desperate to do one, you know what I mean? And when we was... We used to have a rehearsal area, which they had now, but it was a lot more space them days in the studios available to us. And there was a trampoline there. We used to have a roster and jump off the trampoline into the beds. We could jump off the side of the stage into it. And I think Bob Simmons, who was the coordinator, see this. And he come up to me one day and said, do you want to fall off of there? I went, yeah, quite right I do, which was off of the top of the Bond stage, the 07 stage. Which was me, Paul Weston, and Terry Plummer, and getting blown up off of there. I loved
that's
it.
That's a 60-footer, isn't it?
That's
a long way down.
That water in there, funny enough, is the coldest water in the world for some reason. Really? I don't know why, but it's freezing, but I loved it.
Was that the one with when they had submarines. The two submarines in it?
Yeah.
What an unbelievable set that was.
Yeah, great set.
Really. And I mean, I'm guessing over the years you've seen some amazing sets. Like, we were blessed on Potter with some of the ones that we got to work on.
If I go back to a Bond, the volcano, which was where the 07 stage is now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a kid walking onto the interior of a volcano at a helicopter, proper helicopter pad, monorail system, which actually worked. Awesome. Lifts and rockets, everything worked in there. Ken Adams was the... designer of that. I mean, for me as a kid, that was unbelievable. And to watch all the stuntmen and the Chinese guys coming down them ropes, sliding into the volcano, firing machine guns.
Wicked.
You know, mind you, there's a few stuntmen left up there looking down, thinking, I don't want to go down there too fast. Because all they had was hose pipes.
So, but that was before belays,
They had a rope, obviously, let down. And round the rope, they had a hose pipe which was split. We used to clamp it down and used to squeeze. And some of them, the marrow they squeezed, they wasn't slowing down. So they used to hit the deck, unfortunately.
Can you talk about some of the difference in, like, some of the stuff you did starting off that you're like, we would never be allowed to do this now?
No,
like,
you wouldn't. You wouldn't. I mean, what can I... Oh, blimey. I mean, the amount of stuff that... Like horse stuff, you know what I mean? The equipment you've got now available to you. Some of the old stuff, like running W's, which you can't do now, which is tripping the horses over.
Oh,
thank Christ,
now.
You know. So you're falling over now. I mean, the climbing stuff, there's always been climbing stuff around, but to like the Bond, just having a bit of a hose pipe to slow you down from like 100 feet, it wouldn't go down too well with the aviation and safety guy today, would it?
No,
I'm all right, Gov. I've got a bit of hose pipe from B&Q. I'm all right.
So was it just somebody's job was just to get the hose pipe and cut it up and get it ready?
Yeah, there's a section of hose over there, cut what you like.
Right, how much do you want?
You know what I mean? Is it enough to get two hands around and squeeze it like that?
And do you find that the economy on actors doing their own stunts and some films, like, and some actors like Tom, they publish
it's great them, isn't it? Listen, if the actor can do it, you know what I mean? And there's always a risk of anything, you know what I mean? You can fall off the back of the chair and end up bad, you know what I mean? As much as you can let the actor do, I'm a believer in that because it's good value on screen.
Yeah.
But you have to have a cut-off point and they have to listen to you and say, listen, Dan, you've gone as far as I want you to go before I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because if anything, and it's a possibility, and I hope they would listen to you. Yeah. But you've let them go as far as you can go into the fight, into whatever they're doing.
Even the stuff that we was doing with Dan when he was young, you know. Do you remember falling into...
I missed that about Potter. Like, you definitely... I didn't realise that when we left. I was like, because you guys knew me so well and because we spent time together at lunch and all that, you trusted me to do stuff in ways that, like, nobody ever really let me do.
You think from the very first Potter, when we had our training area, you used to come, we used to set up the obstacle course to do this.
And 3 times a week, at least.
Look how you gained in experience and doing stuff with David and Mark and Tolga, all the boys during the day. Little bit of sparring with Dinny, which you never got hit before again.
No. Or,
you know, all this sort of stuff. You learnt about us to trust us, and we learnt about you to know how much you could do.
Yeah, exactly. People ask me about
the team. Why do you have the same team on all the time? Yeah, one of the reasons I had the same team because Dan, Emma, Rupert, the twins, everyone knew them guys, they trusted them guys, and that was important to me and for you guys to be comfortable. You was always comfortable with David or Mark was standing and Tolga was standing next to you.
Totally. Yeah,
you know, they was getting you ready to do something, so you was very happy for that. But if suddenly three people turn up who you didn't know, they was new, you go, hold on a minute, is that all right? But if David said that's fine, you go, do it.
Now, just going on, because it's a family enterprise, the stunt industry in the UK, and I've asked a lot of the guys what it's been like to be a parent and how that affected their decisions as a performer. Now, you're at the other end, you're a stunt coordinator, but not only that, but your daughter Tilly's now one of the top female stunt performers in the country.
Were you
ever nervous about her getting in the industry? You still now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. If I said otherwise, I'd be lying. I am nervous that she's in it. But she's very good. She's very conscientious what he does. Yeah. You know, and she's very honest about what she can do and she can't do. But one of the things she does is she rides horses very well and she actually drives the car very well.
Yeah,
and on, I think it was Fast or I think it was Fast, we were doing a chase. Yeah, Till, drive that car out the back there. She looked at me like that. What's the matter? She says, Dad, that's boring. She wanted to be up with the action.
In the middle.
Yeah, all right, we'll get in, you know what I mean? She wanted to be in the action. And I know she can do it, but, you know, of course I'm worried about her.
And
that's it is. But, you know, you've got to let them go at some time. She's 25 now, and she knows what she can do and she can't do.
Yeah.
And she's very good at that. And
she's established herself as a very
brave She has. Yeah. And I'm glad that she now, you know, because she started like then, she started on the Potters as running around with a cape on as a kid, as an extra, and she's come up through that. So she's been brought up, which is great for her because the experience she got, like yourself, you know, before you actually become a stunt person officially, the experience you had on set, you know, because it's not just about being a stunt person or whatever, it's on set experience you need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to be there on time because the morning you're not there on time, that's the morning they wanted you.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the mornings after... Where are you, Dave? I'm on the M25. Where? I'm on the arch shoulder raising because it was late. But, you know, but he learned out of that.
Yeah. It was a stunt getting into work every day, I tell you.
That's how he learned. And once he got his... He got going. He was there on time, always on time. But that's a process that you go through, and it was great. It's great for Tilly, it was great for Dave, great for Mark and Tolga because they come into it a lot earlier as kids.
Yeah.
They learnt all that on set experience, making the coordinator a cup of tea or coffee, going to get a sandwich, looking after the mats. You know, I think I'll go and get Dan a mat. You know what I mean? Without me saying anything, he'd be gone. Get you a mat to put on the floor.
Right.
Or he needs an elbow pad. It'd be there before he's thought about it.
Yeah.
Or Mark or Tolga.
Because they're watching the scene and they know
what they're watching it. They're always there watching you or Emma or Rupert or any one of them. I'll go and get this. Always standing by with it.
Yeah.
And as I said, this is why it made my job a lot. When you've got people working for you who are good stunt people, it makes the stunt coordinator's job a lot easier because he can concentrate getting in with the director. helping out, design stuff and whatever, you know, and I could leave David there and running it or whoever was there.
Some performers that you've admired, you know, you've got to work with everybody pretty much. Is there any that have stuck out, you know, over the years you thought, yeah, that's an amazing performer?
David, you know, he not because he's sitting there, unfortunately, and whatever. We had a great team on Potter for 10 years.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
For 10 years, a great team. He introduced me to Mark, who ended up, look at Mark today,
he's
fantastic.
Brilliant. Yeah, he's doing really well.
Brilliant, you know what I mean? And Tolga was totally different. Tolga walked through the door, looked like Harry Potter before I actually see you in your outfit. Yeah. I haven't seen the picture on the front of a book, and he come on, and they've all come on to be great stuntmen and doing what they're doing. And there was some great stuff done, and David, as you know, done some great stuff. But to me, the best stunt of all was Tolga falling flat.
It's the Tolga drop.
It's unbelievable,
isn't it?
It was the best drop anyone could ever do.
I remember you
and we stood there like that. We all looked at each other. What happened there? He didn't carve. Boom.
Yeah, straight. Unbelievable. Yeah.
And the noise was great as well. Wasn't it?
Whack, all the dust coming up. Yeah, great job. Cool. Yeah. And another one that I want to mention was Interview with a Vampire, because that, the fire job, they're on fire, they come out the caskets on the wires.
Well, that actually come, because at the time, we started that job in New Orleans, San Francisco, then back to Pinewood, and they started talking about that job halfway through when we was out in the States.
Yeah.
And it was... I was listening to it and it was all going to be CG.
Yeah.
And I said to Redmond Morris, who was the producer on that, and Neil Jordan, great director, by the way, that we can actually do this. I said, we can actually do this live. So, you know, we priced it up and everything, whatever it come to, they went for it. And the only sour thing I was choked about, they added a CG... thing at the end of it, which spoiled it for me. Yeah. But that everything you see there, when them boys are like on wires flying.
Can you just describe the action sequence for us, Greg?
It's when Brad Pitt, because he was against all that being a vampire and everything. He, you know, Tom Cruise done him 400 years before and he hated it. So he wanted to get rid of all the vampires in the crypt. So he went round with a big gasoline can all over the coffins in the crypt and just tipped over some candles, and it hit the flame, and it ran along, and it went all over the coffins. And Andreas was the first one out.
And
the
there
coffin.
Were the boys in the coffin. The
boys were actually in coffins on the wires, and if they could get out if they wanted to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we give it a certain amount of time. We knew that they'd be alight inside. You know, it was any seconds. Yeah. But if there was any of them in, they felt they could come out at any time. It was 5 seconds, and bang, and we pulled them all out of the coffins.
On fire, full burn. Really?
Paul Jennings went flying from one... Lee went flying from one end to the other. Paul Jennings come up through the grate and went into the wall. Lee Sheward went down the stairs alight.
Yeah.
Andreas...
all in one?
The coffins was one, then Lee down the stairs, because it was such a hot, that was really a hot set.
Yeah.
I mean, when they set light to everything in there, that was absolutely boiling in there. Scorching.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was just mentioning, because you mentioned Lee Sheward on that job, on Mission, when he blows the fish tank. Can you explain that? Because not only is that one of the most aggressive jerkbacks on film ever. But that was a big job.
That probably was the most rehearsed jerkback that I've been involved with, because that the tank, because there was a fish tank above it.
Yeah.
Which I think was something like 16 ton of water.
Yeah.
So to hold that up, they had to have a proper frame.
Yeah.
You know, and the framework was like going through your window there. We had to be precise on getting him through there.
Yeah.
And
hitting
the framework. So we started off with just a soft frame and had it on the power.
All while the water's dead at the same time.
All everything was at the same time. He goes through, the water drops down, everything. And we rehearsed it and rehearsed until we got it. You know, in the end, he was going through the same thing, the same time, the same place, and landing in the same place. And we could have actually put that cushion down and he landed on every time. And that's how much we'd done it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's what was the outcome of that job, which was a great job.
What do you like, in the most general sense of it, like, what is it that you love about it, about films, about making them, about being on set, about stunts?
I think it's a thing that's been with me since a boy.
Right.
It's stuff that, you know, on bomb sites when I was a kid, it was stuff you was running around, jumping up off things, climbing scaffolding, jumping down onto things, throwing bricks through windows, playing cowboys and Indians,
yeah.
All that sort of... I was a baby stuntman then, and lucky enough, I was... carried it on to now. I've enjoyed every day. I walk onto a set, I enjoy it every day, and I still do.
Yeah.
Because it's different every day.
Yeah.
You know, you might be doing the same scene for a week, and you know that more than anyone, Dan. Same, but, you know, approaching that set, you see different people, or you have a little laugh on the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a conveyor belt where it's just saying, it's something new every day.
Do you feel like the industry, because the amount of time you have to commit to it, do you feel like, you know, being a father, a family man, that there's some parts in your life that you missed out
on? I've missed out a lot. You know, I've missed out a lot on Tilly.
Yeah.
I mean, and she's a great kid now, you know what I mean? And Dawn's done a really good job with her there. I missed out a lot of that. I missed out on a lot of holidays.
Yeah.
You know, because a day's work to me is a day's work.
Yeah.
And I've never booked a holiday like now for January. Because she's thinking, if I'm going to go on holiday, don't pick up. Where can we go Saturday?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's one of those because I have to work,
yeah.
And a lot of the other people have to work because you could be out of work a long time,
yeah.
And when you're not working, you find that becomes your holiday.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And you know me, I like nice. Like we should all like nice things, but I like nice things and to go to nice places. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it comes at a price sometimes.
Okay, and some of the locations that you loved. I mean, I know this about you, but you were there when the Berlin Wall fell, weren't you?
What?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Can you please explain? Yeah.
Standing underneath the Brandenburg Gate at midnight when the wall finally come down, and there was hundreds of thousands of people. And as you was walking down, they was giving beer and champagne and dancing, fireworks were going. And we was actually at midnight, we was actually standing underneath the Brandenburg Gate on that night.
Had you been there on a job?
I was doing Shining Through with Michael Douglas and Melanie Griffiths.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant.
So, how many times did you get nervous for your performers or your actors?
Nervous always.
Yeah. Always?
Yeah.
And, I mean... I've never seen it in you, Greg, really.
Do you get more nervous watching other people than doing stuff yourself?
Yeah,
I've never seen it in you, though, because I've always... Yeah.
You can't show it.
Yeah, always been at the end of your action,
I always am. I'd sooner do it myself and get hurt than getting one of my performers hurt, and that's gospel truth.
Yeah, no, I believe it. Talk about Lost in Space.
Oh, it's great.
What was,
Greg, best experience of my life. I was 14 years old, and I was just... You know, by the way, you're just going to go and work on this film. There's a whole made spaceship that you get to play around
what
on.
What was it about, Dave, when you first saw? Because was it the gymnastics club? What was it that you first was like? Oh, he's fearless, or was like?
Well, he was fearless. Yeah. I mean, he was a great gymnast anyway, and he'd done everything that you asked him to do with ease.
Yeah,
he didn't think about. Oh, he did think about it, but he could do. It was nothing he couldn't do, running around a set and doing jumps and leaps and whatever. Yeah. And plus, he was an annoying little fella as well.
Brilliant.
Right, I'm trying to think. Is there anything else we've left out, Dave? I mean, that's like...
Mate, Greg, what an amazing conversation.
Yeah, dude, this is...
We
so
could
good.
Sit here and pick your brains for hours.
Yeah,
is there anything you want to ask us?
I'll tell you one. I think Dan was doing we were doing a little wire pull on Dan up on the Hagrid's hut at the top of the thing.
Fight back,
and We needed a mat. For you.
Oh,
and David and Mark went down on the quad to the stunt area and got a blue mat, and they got it. David was driving the quad, Mark sitting behind, and they're holding the blue mat on top of them, and they're gone flying down the runway with this mat like that, you know, on this quad doing 55 mile an hour with a blue mat. All of a sudden, my phone goes, hello? Hello, Greg. Roy. Hello, Roy. He said, where in the script can you tell me it's got a quad bike with a blue mat on top of it?
motorcycle display team.
And as he's saying that, I'm looking at it, I went, I'll deal with it, Roy. We're in the script, and it says there's a quad with a blue mat flying along the runway.
But do you know what, Greg? We had so many laughs.
Oh, yeah.
We had so many laughs, so much good times.
Yeah.
And I really hope that, even though my time away from the industry has been 8 years now, that there's still that opportunity to have that laugh at work.
Let me put it this way. Because of my age, I'm still part of the original crew, and I still like to have a nice time and have a joke. We've got to take it seriously. Everything's taken seriously. It's not, nothing stunt-wise is taken as a joke, but the approach to it and the banter and everything, I try and keep the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think it just lightens things up a little bit, and it just helps along with the job. So I like to think that, you know, you've got to be strict sometimes. You might have a miserable day or whatever, but I'll try to have things nice if I can.
Brilliant. Right. Greg, thank you for today. Like, amazing. Awesome.
Okay, thanks again to Greg for joining us, and thanks to all you who tuned in to listen to this week's episode of Cunning Stunts. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'll be back next week. Until then, take care, and thanks for listening. Ripple Production podcast series produced by myself, David Holmes, and Amy Stairs. Sound recording, editor, and music by Joe Lamb. To find out more about us, please visit our website, www.rippleproductions.co.uk, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram.